Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Happy Friday, everybody. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Don't forget Sealands Grove football tonight on Eagle 107. Lewisburg on 100.9 The Valley. And here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, Shikellamy will be back in action tonight. And don't forget to listen at 6:30 this evening because Kevin Herr will have a great tribute and an emotional tribute to Coach Dick Hort, who after the Southern Columbia game said, you know what, that's it, I'm done. Dave Ritchie's going to join Kevin on the Shikellamy broadcast beginning tonight. But for Kevin, he'll have an opportunity to pay tribute to Coach Hort at the beginning of the broadcast at 6:30 this evening. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. The bags are right there at the register. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. You can always tailgate at home for these games. Penn State and Indiana tomorrow will be at 3:30. We're on beginning at 2 o'clock here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. So go to Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. The Red Sox go to the World Series.
Swinging a fly ball left field. Benintendi moving back, back toward the wall. He reaches up, he makes the catch, and the Red Sox have won the American League pennant for the 14th time in their history. Andrew Benintendi with a last put out there mobbing Craig Kimbrell, who got the save tonight. David Price with a win, and the Red Sox are going on to the World Series for the first time since 2013. They beat the Houston Astros in Game 5, 4-1. They win the season series 4-1, winning the last four games. They're mobbing Kimbrell and one another on the pitcher's mound right now as the Red Sox are celebrating their pennant-clinching victory here in Houston, Texas tonight. Can you believe it?
Joe Castiglione with the call on the Red Sox radio network last night. Think about this, what Boston has done in the last couple of weeks. The Yankees won 100 games. The Astros won more than 100 games. The Red Sox went 7-2 against them in the postseason. Now, there's one more big step. It's either the Dodgers or the Brewers. Tonight, it'll be Game 6 at Miller Park with the Dodgers up 3-2 in the National League Championship Series. But J.D. Martinez and Rafael Devers each homered off Justin Verlander last night, and the Red Sox won it 4-1 to win the series in 5. Tomorrow, Penn State football, the Nittany Lions will take on Indiana Memorial Stadium in Bloomington. And Mike Miller covers Indiana football for the Bloomington Herald Times. Mike, welcome back. It's great to have you with us.
Hey, doing well. Good to be back with you guys.
Great to be back with you too, Mike. Let's get to Indiana. I want to start with Peyton Ramsey. I thought Tom Allen, personal opinion, made a great decision last year to say, look, this is the style I want to play. This is the guy I want to play the style with. So we're just going to play him. How do you view what he did last year to then set up this year for Peyton Ramsey?
You know, it was interesting because obviously last year you had some struggles at the quarterback position. You bring in a JUCO guy in Richard Lego, who had been the starter going into that 2017 season. But really, you know, I think it was actually at Penn State last year where that game right there kind of told Tom Allen, well, we're not really getting the play we need. We need a bit of a more mobile quarterback to really give us some sort of running presence in this offense. And I think it was in that Penn State game, off the top of my head, if I'm correct.
You are correct.
They made that switch to Peyton Ramsey. He started the next game after that. But, you know, actually coming into this year, it was a wide-open competition. I think a lot of people, myself included, expected Brandon Dawkins to be the starting quarterback. He was a guy who had started previously at Arizona, eventually lost his job to Khalil Tate out there. So, but that didn't work out. Dawkins just wasn't consistent, wasn't accurate enough, just wasn't. I don't think he was really the player that they thought they were getting. And frankly, Peyton Ramsey really asserted himself as the most consistent option during fall camp. He had to hold off a really talented freshman named Michael Penix, a prospect who committed to Indiana over Florida State and had a couple other big time offers, Tennessee among them. Really, really talented player, but ultimately I think that, you know, you had to go on the road for your first game. You're looking at, you know, these first few games of the season, you just wanted the guy who'd been out there and kind of been through the battles before. And Peyton Ramsey was that guy. Was, like I said, very, very consistent throughout fall camp. And, you know, he's kind of a high floor, maybe low ceiling type guy. I'm not sure he's really the long-term option at quarterback for Indiana. And frankly, I wouldn't be too totally surprised to see Michael Penix in certain moments this week. But, you know, by and large, Peyton Ramsey has done a decent job at limiting mistakes. I think he's tied for second in the Big Ten with interceptions. I think he's got seven. But, you know, by and large, he makes the plays that are there. I think he's more of a game manager than really he's a game winner at this point. But like I said, I think with Peyton Ramsey right now, as far as Big Ten competition, you're looking at a guy with a, you know, a high floor, low ceiling type quarterback.
All right. Now let's get to the running game. For circumstances that I think most people know, Morgan Ellison is done at Indiana. From the football perspective, what has that meant to the running game this year?
You know, I really don't think it's meant a whole lot. You know, they had a freshman named Stevie Scott step in from the very early goings this year. Got another guy who asserted himself during fall camp. And you're getting a pretty similar style runner in Stevie Scott. I think Morgan Ellison probably had more burst that we saw last year, but you're getting a similar physical downhill type runner in Stevie Scott. But again, you know, there's so many different things to go into this running game that just hasn't really been there for the past couple of years. You know, the offensive line, I don't think, has been very good. Wasn't very good last year. In fact, it was not good at all last year. And this year, it's just been way too inconsistent. I don't want to pin it all on the offensive line this year, too. I think that also when you start a freshman running back who's, you know, not one of those blue chip type guys, you know, you also run the risk of, you know, just missing reads, missing the mark. I mean, I think Stevie Scott's done that. And, you know, his backup, Ronnie Walker, is another former four-star guy they got out of Virginia. Talented player who's shown in you know, flashes that he can be a nice complement to Stevie Scott with the sort of speed that he has and shiftiness that he has. But it's a work in progress of this running game right now. It's just not – they've abandoned it at times in Big Ten play. They're just not getting it going and try to go to some more short passes to kind of make up for it. It's definitely a work in progress. I think they got some talent there. I think Stevie Scott is a guy who's talented, and I'd say the same for Ronnie Walker. But, you know, just getting those guys going, getting them traction with some blocking and getting those guys to make the right reads right now is, again, just been a work in progress.
For the most part, it's a veteran wide receiving core. What have they meant to Ramsey?
Yeah, you're right. These are guys that have been around. It's, I think the question going in was depth at that position, but like you said, you've got guys that have been there. I mean, Nick Westbrook a couple years ago, you know, tore his ACL last year, missed all last season. But right. The year before, you know, for all intents and purposes, he was a 1,000-yard guy. I think he finished with 995 yards. Just a big, tall, kind of physical guy on the outside. Donovan Hale, maybe the most athletic guy on the team, really another big body type receiver. Consistency has been a big problem for him. But really in the slot is where they've had some of their best success with guys like Luke Timian and Wap Fillier, who's been a little banged up the last couple of weeks. And Jayshon Harris, who's back after three ACL injuries, he's really stepped up as Timian and Wap Fillier have been out. But I think Wap Fillier could be a guy to watch this weekend if he's healthy. He's missed a couple games here. But he's, I think, the most explosive player they have on the field. Just keeping him healthy after that Michigan State game has been the issue.
What kind of feel in the return game, the punt return game, does Jayshon Harris have?
Yeah, he's what you want back there. He's sure-handed, and he's got some, you know, some burst to him, some wiggle. You know, he can just, if he gets a hold, he can make something happen. And again, you know, he's just a tremendous story, too, I think, from the Indiana perspective of a guy who has had ACL for the last three seasons, comes back because he wants to give one more go, and had that return against Ball State about a month ago that was kind of like the, you know, tying the bow on a really, really a nice story to kind of see unfold. But, yeah, just from a playing perspective, I mean, he's pretty much what you want out of that position. He's not going to make mistakes, and, you know, you give him a little hole and he can make something happen with it.
All right. Let's get to the defense now. Marcelino Ball, what does he mean to the versatility of the Indiana defense?
He's a guy you can basically ask to do just about everything. So, really physical player, got some decent athleticism to him. He plays a hybrid safety role, which is, you know, it's kind of a misnomer. He's really an extension of the linebackers. So he can play in coverage. He can come up and stop the run. You know, this week he might even serve as a bit of a spy, you know, with McSorley and all that. But, you know, he had a really bad game last week. It was a really, really bad game for him. He was, really, really struggled with Iowa's tight ends, which, you know, you get Iowa and you're seeing a different approach. You're seeing a different package, and you're going to see it any other time during the season with those tight ends. And, you know, he and I think, you know, some of the safeties as well, I think they really struggled with keeping an eye on them and then keeping up with them. And in the run game too, I mean, he was bouncing off guys. It was just a really bad game, but he's very important. I mean, he's a guy in that hybrid role who connects the back end to the front end and does all the things in between. So I think this is an opportunity for a big bounce back game for him.
How good's the front four been?
Not very good.
Yeah.
Not very good at all. You know, they don't get much pressure. They've had moments. I mean, I don't think it's been a bad year, but just it's consistency. I mean, when you're Indiana, it's hard to really get the guys that can really make that consistent impact. I mean, at Indiana, you're not getting the biggest guys. You're not getting the fastest guys. You're getting the guys in between. And that's just kind of what they have right now. I mean, they got some interesting young guys, but they're not really there yet, and they're not really playing as much as you maybe think they'll play in a couple years. But, yeah, it's just I think talent athleticism just isn't really there right now.
Yeah, the secondary has a guy like Jonathan Crawford back there. It's one of those deals, Mike, when I sat down and put my chart together. It's probably the same thing when Don Fisher put his chart together. He goes, what, Trace McSorley's still there? I put mine together. I said, what, Crawford is still there?
Yeah.
what kind of leader has he been? Because this guy has a pretty good nose for the ball.
He really does. I mean, he's a guy who started from day one in 2015. And a guy, again, who's really asserted himself from day one in 2015. He's just been that guy you can count on in the back end of your defense. Like you said, he's got a nose for a ball. Indiana's been really good with generating takeaways. I think they had an interception in every game but last game against Iowa. And,
right.
And actually, Jonathan Crawford did pick off a ball against Iowa, but it was negated by a pass interference call in one of the corners. So, but yeah, again, he's the kind of guy he's basically almost been a senior for two or three years, basically, just the amount of football he's played and the responsibilities they put on him. He's just a guy that you can count on back there. Like I said, he didn't have a very good game last week. I mean, really, no one on the defense had a very good game. But generally speaking, he's a guy who doesn't make a whole lot of mistakes, and he's going to get you a pick here and there.
What about the reaction of Indiana fans? Tom Allen is, you know, a high school coach in Indiana at one point in his life. He believes in the state. I go back to the old Bo Schembechler line when he was the athletic director at Michigan and Bill Frieder took the Arizona State job. He said, I don't want an Arizona State guy coaching my team. I want a Michigan man coaching my team. Does Indiana essentially have an Indiana man coaching their team?
Yeah, I think they do. I mean, here's a guy who came up through the ranks in Indiana high school football, of course, branched out and got into the college game the last decade or so. But, I mean, he's a guy who in recruiting, Indiana's recruiting really well right now. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, obviously Tom Allen has the connections in state. He's hired a staff that has a lot of connections in state. You know, it's tricky too when you talk about recruiting in Indiana because, again, as I mentioned earlier, you're not typically getting, you know, a lot of four-star guys. If you get one, I think a lot of fans are generally pleased to get at least one here and there. It's tough because they've done a good job in Indiana, but they got to get some momentum here on the field. You know, it's one thing to actually have those connections and tap into them, but they've just not gotten over the hump as far as getting that momentum generating win. You know, you look at last year's Purdue game, you look at the Michigan State game earlier this year, you look at Iowa games. All three of those games were virtually toss-up games when you're Indiana, and they just didn't even show up. I mean, that's really the next step this program has to take. I mean, you can talk about them being competitive with, you know, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, but the next step Indiana has to take is just winning games against that middle tier, against Michigan State, against Iowa, against teams like that, Maryland, you know, that's really what they got to do. So, you know, he's generated some momentum in the state. I think fans are, you know, eager to see what he can do. And certainly the recruiting is encouraging right now, but you want to build that encouraging momentum in recruiting by actually winning games, which Indiana hasn't had a winning season in 11 years. So that's still the next step. It's an elusive next step, but, it's certainly important nonetheless.
During some lean years in Indiana basketball, I was always impressed every time I went in to do a game there where there were still 15,000 to 17,000 fans in there. Every seat may not have been taken, but it was still a huge crowd there. What kind of reaction is Indiana football getting at this point, in your opinion?
I think fans are frustrated and a little discouraged. I think, again, the Michigan State game where they just laid an egg and the Iowa game last week where they just frankly just didn't show up is discouraging because I think a lot of fans are perceptive to the fact that, you know, competing against Ohio State for three quarters, that's encouraging. You know, going into playing Michigan or playing Penn State close is all fine and well, but they got to get these games against, you know, Iowa is built with comparable talent. Iowa obviously has a system that's been in place for 20 years, but, you know, from a talent perspective, it's not all that, you know, far from what Indiana's got on the field.
That's fair.
And to see Indiana just completely not show up, not play physical, not really play, just not even play well at all. I think it was just dispiriting. And when you get to this point in the schedule, mid-October, you know, basketball, the first basketball exhibition is 2 weeks from today. And, you know, it's a lot of excitement about Romeo Langford and the basketball team this year.
Sure.
It's hard to keep interest if you're Indiana football, especially when it's the same old thing fans have been watching and paying to watch for 20 years, 30 years, whatever it's been since Bill Mallory's been gone. It weighs on you. It weighs on the fan base. And I think there's some well-placed frustration with the team, just with the tradition, the soul of the program. It's hard to really, you know, keep fans interested when it's just you can talk a good game. And I think that they've taken some steps to really position this program well in the future. But, you know, it's really just even in the last 5-6 years when they've been competitive in the Big Ten, I mean, they're just still not getting those wins that you really need to take that next step.
Well, one thing Indiana has not had yet, they have not had their bye week yet. So, I mean, they're playing their 8th straight game in 8 weeks. But there's a number within the number. How concerning is the number within the number that it's their defense is giving up 35.7 points per game in the Big Ten?
Yeah, they've taken a step back the last 2 weeks. I think that they've got a lot of young guys out there. So in a sense, it's almost maybe a regression to the mean where they were playing, you know, maybe above where I think a lot of folks may have thought they would have been, especially given some of the young guys they had out there. But again, yeah, I think they've given up 6 passing touchdowns in each of the last 2 games. I mean, you do that, you know, Dwayne Haskins carves you up. That's one thing. When you have Nate Stanley come in and do it, it might be another. And I'm not to say that Nate Stanley's not a good quarterback.
Sure, I understand.
But yeah, it's. I think it is discouraging. I mean, again, I mean, you're just getting carved up by tight ends and just not making plays. It's a concern. But again, when you look at the future of Indiana football, if fans are going to take anything positive from what they've seen, it's that when you look at some of those interception numbers, the bulk of them have come by the young guys. So, again, there's talent out there, but in football, as we all know, it takes a little bit for that talent to really you know, come into place and really you know, sit firm in where it is. But yeah, it's definitely been a concern on defense the last couple weeks. There's no doubt about it.
Was it that in the preseason, if they didn't get 3 takeaways in practice, they had to run?
That's correct.
Yeah. See, I mean, yeah, I'm connected, Mike. Yeah. But that was the deal. That's you know, if they didn't get 3 takeaways in a practice, they had to run.
Yeah, that's the goal for every practice, every game, actually, is 3 takeaways. And they didn't do very well generating takeaways last year. There were a lot of balls that could have been picked off that just weren't caught. And so that was a big point of emphasis going into the season. They've had some success with takeaways and interceptions this year. I think Maryland may have jumped to the front of the Big Ten after playing Rutgers. They had the Rutgers effect last week. But I think that's when you look at these past couple weeks, that might add to the discouragement with some of the fans, is that you look at this defense and you thought it might take a little bit of a step back, and it has, because you lost an All-American linebacker in T-Gray Scales.
Really good.
The guy right next to him, Chris Covington, who got drafted by the Cowboys. You lost 2 really, really good linebackers and a couple important guys up front on the line. But, you know, that secondary returned some key guys, as you mentioned, Crawford and Ball, and, again, had some talent to piece around them. But, yeah, I think just the play the last 2 weeks is without question concerning from a group that you were really hoping to lean on inside of that defense.
Mike, absolute pleasure. I look forward to seeing you on Saturday.
Absolutely. Safe travels out here.
Mike Miller, Bloomington Herald Times. And we'll see Mike out there tomorrow. It'll be a 3:30 kickoff tomorrow, where I'm beginning at 2 o'clock here on News Radio 1070 WKOK and on WKOK.com. Don't forget, Shikellamy football is coming up tonight. 6:30 this evening will be the airtime. And Coach Dick Hort, after the Southern Columbia game, says, look, I'm retiring. And so Dave Ritchie will take over in the analyst chair. Dave will do a brilliant job like he always does. I mean, Dave's just really good, really smart. Does a great, great job. But Kevin Herr, who's worked 21 seasons with Coach Hort, he'll open the broadcast with his tribute to Coach Dick Hort this evening, and I think that's going to be well worth listening to, because that is going to be from the heart this evening. We'll look forward to that. Then the kickoff's at 7 o'clock. Sealands Grove will be on Eagle 107 tonight. And also coming up on 100.9 The Valley, Lewisburg, making its playoff push, will be playing this evening as well. All the area kickoffs are set for 7. And don't forget, Sean will have the area's best postgame show on Eagle 107 this evening. That is a great listen every week. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar is indeed led by the barrels and the dills, second to none. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. One more half hour to go. We'll hear from Neil Coulong of USA Today as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Forget trick-or-treat. Sunbury Motors Ford is giving you all treats because they have to sell seven new Fords every day now through Halloween. That's right. Now through Halloween, they're doing what it takes to sell seven new Fords every day. Just listen. Ford Escapes from under 20 grand. SMC has 53 2018 Escapes from 19,320. Choose from over 61 2018 F-150 trucks starting at $25,969.
They've sold over 40,000 Ford trucks over the past 103 years.
And needs to sell seven Fords every day, now through Halloween. Buy a 2018 Ford Explorer starting at $31,705. SMC has 22 to choose from. There's also 13 2018 Ford Edges from $25,390. SMC is making it easier than ever because they need to sell seven new Fords every day, now through Halloween. Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Final half hour for the week. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. By the way, if you missed anything during the week, don't forget to check out the Steve Jones Show podcast. You know, it's plenty of interviews, maybe something you wanted to listen to from a couple weeks ago. It's all there. And coming up this half hour, Neil Coulong, USA Today. Neil right now is at the Mirtha Airport in Johnstown, thinking that maybe a Le'Veon Bell plane will land there. But I think he's wasting his time. Some now are saying that Le'Veon Bell may not show up until October 30th. But we'll talk to Neil about that in a few moments. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Stock up for the weekend. You can always tailgate watching Penn State football at home. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar led by the barrels and the dills. Indeed, second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Always great time to buy a car. This is a great time of the year to do that. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And with that, you know, Josh Allen benched. Nathan Peterman, they don't like him either. Derek Anderson signed. He's going to start. Oh, what a time to be a Buffalo Bills fan. Welcome in, Neil. Great to have you with us.
Jim Kelly isn't walking through that door. Thurman Thomas isn't walking through that door, but Josh Allen is. Maybe.
Andre if Reed not, is Nate not Peterman. Walking through that door, man.
I feel so bad. I'm dirty.
Oh, no, I do. Believe me, I feel awful. I really do. As funny as this segment is so far, I feel awful about this. Neil is currently, by the way, at Arnold Palmer Airport in Latrobe because they think that's where Bell might land. Okay.
He got lost.
All right, I want to ask you something. Is there any idea? Because, look, James Conner has done zero to lose his job. Zero. If Bell decides that next week is the week, what do you do with him?
I put him on the field with James Conner. You guys might remember this, that the Steelers at one point
had D'Angelo Williams and Le'Veon Bell in kind of a similar situation, although Williams probably wasn't quite what Connor is right now, and they certainly didn't have this much time on the field to get an idea of what Williams could be the way that Connor has. Put both of them on the field. How are you going to defend that? Imagine a Le'Veon Bell Steelers backfield. When you start pre-snap, he's in the backfield, Connor is in the backfield. In other words, this team can throw and run at a high rate of explosion. How do you defend that? At that point, my opinion is you've already made your decision. I'm not sure what a defense can do in terms of package and personnel. How do you defend that? So for me, it's not about getting Bell reps. It's not about getting Connor carries. It's more what they can show before the ball is snapped. And from there, let Roethlisberger figure out how they're going to gain yards. I don't know how you stop that. That's the position they're in today. And in many ways, this is exactly the ideal scenario the Steelers hoped for going into this. Granted, they'd probably be better than 3-2-1, but it's a great position for them to be in.
I mean, they're only half game back in the standings despite all the trials and tribulations of how the opening month and a half has gone. They're half game back.
Yeah, a weird set of circumstances, too, because you get whipped by the Ravens, you tie with the Browns, and you win one game over the Bengals, which, frankly, you usually win games over the Bengals.
Sure.
For them to be in the position that they're in now, with Bell coming back, it's kind of crazy. You know, I wrote the season off, you know, 3 weeks ago, like everybody else did, right? What they have now going into this game, I really think, or going into the bye week, I mean, I really think the Steelers have the upper hand on the rest of the AFC simply because teams are not going to know what they're going to do when Bell gets on the field. And that seems really weird because Le'Veon Bell coming back to the Steelers shouldn't have happened at all. But they managed a decent record in the time that he was gone, and
right.
They established James Conner, who very well could be a Pro Bowl running back, the way that we're seeing it now. They have limitless options of what they can do offensively. And if we've seen anything in the first 6 weeks of the NFL season, it's the defense doesn't really matter a whole lot.
Yeah.
So you've got offense. You've got the capability of blanketing teams with talent on the field. They could do that. It's possible.
See, I put them on kickoff coverage the first week. Tell me. I'm sorry.
It could be.
See, that's what I do.
Better than a lot of guys they have now.
Yeah. Could, yeah. Although I'd be hoping Boswell kicked it out of the end zone just to kind of avoid any issues with it.
Kick the ball out of the end zone. Don't let him return it.
Don't let him return it.
I don't want to do that at halftime.
I just want you to get in shape. Here are your sprints. and do that. Look, they only gave up 21 in that game. Now, I know they gave up points late. But are they playing better defensively?
You know, I might have said that before. For me, having watched Cincinnati, I thought the Bengals had a lot more mental lapses offensively than I would have expected them to have.
I don't think
they played very well.
I think they pressed. I think they were desperate to win this game and show the Steelers how good they are. I think they pressed.
That's an amazing concept, considering you've got all control over the division.
I know.
You know, it's not easy to beat a Steelers team. I get that, but you didn't have to do a whole lot. But the first play of the game, they had an illegal man downfield. I mean, these are the scripted plays of the game.
I know.
Those are the ones you need to know more than anything. Those are the ones, frankly, you do know. For them to have had as many mental blanks as they had early, they got it together. The last drive of both the first half and the second half, that was much more the Bengals team that I've seen this year. They're dangerous. They are explosive. They're versatile. I thought Andy Dalton played a much better game than his statistics will give him credit for. A lot of guys let him. AJ Green dropped three passes or something like that. I don't know if he's had a game like that in his career. I think this is really kind of the problem with Cincinnati. The Steelers get in their head, you know. I mean, it shouldn't have happened the way that it happened. But with that, they still had a chance to win the game. They let Pittsburgh back into the door a little bit, and then the Steelers did what the Steelers should be doing all season long. They're able to put a team away late in the game, which is what they did. I wasn't sure they were going to be able to do it. They impressed me. Pittsburgh did offensively with that last drive.
Yep.
But the coup de grace of the whole thing, the defense that they played on that touchdown pass, I don't want to hear anything about offensive pass interference. It's absolutely ridiculous to suggest that might have been the case. The defense, especially
on the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, I mean, come on, you're pressing the guy. Okay, nobody's right. going to call offensive pass interference if you're in man. Everybody can see you're in man, and you're pressing the receiver. It's a technique issue.
But are you doing that within the 5 yards of the line of scrimmage? Of course you are. You're
not
on the line
close.
Of scrimmage.
Maybe
so,
a yard.
See, that's the part that isn't brought into play on that play. Are you within the 5 yards? The defender is allowed to make contact with you before the ball is released.
Yeah, the defender can hit you. The real thing is, from the official's perspective, if the defender is the one initiating the contact, which he absolutely was, if you watch the play with Justin Hunter, what is Justin Hunter supposed to do? Granted, the defensive player is allowed to have that space, but there's nothing that says the offensive player has to get out of his way. I mean, come on. The Steelers baited the Bengals into that exact play.
Of course they did.
They called exactly what they did to go against the exact defense that they got. That's, to me, that is as much a mental mistake probably the Bengals made multiple of it in the second half, but that was as big a mental mistake as any other one that they've made in the last 10 years against this team. There's no reason to call that defense at that time. Their blitz didn't land the entire game.
No.
Why would you call that there? Why would you – look – Antonio Brown is literally 6 inches away from a 6'3", 210-pound wide receiver. Yeah. What do you think they're going to do? And you're in man coverage without a safety. Why would you do that? For me, the Bengals gave that game away more than anything else. I think the Bengals played less than what they are, more than the Steelers played up to who they are. And the Bengals are still, in my mind, probably a better team.
Yeah.
I really think that. But the Steelers were the ones who wanted to play and win the game. The Bengals didn't do that.
Which brings me to the next part. The Bengals have to play Kansas City this week. So, I mean, the Steelers could be right there. I mean, right there with them when they come back to play, because the Bengals have Kansas City next.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to see how many times the Bengals play cover zero against the Chiefs. That'll be good. The Chiefs are without question a better team than the Bengals are, but I think Cincinnati can still contend. They're what, a half game up on the Steelers. I'm not giving up hope on them in any stretch of the imagination right now. This was a game the Steelers had to win. If they didn't win, what we're talking about right now is basically the draft. I mean, they didn't have a choice. They had to win that game if they're going to compete, and they did what they needed to do on the field to get to a position where they're still competitive, to give Le'Veon Bell back, to figure out how they really are going to be a team. And this is when Mike Tomlin shines, really. It's post-bye. The second half, Cincinnati had an opportunity to really step on the Steelers' throat, but once again, just failed to do it. I still can't understand why or how. It's amazing. They're the Bengals. They're the Bengals.
Because I think they put so much pressure on themselves. I think, like themselves out in playing the game, they played the game too tight. Because to them, it was like Super Bowl from it. Just calm down, okay? It's week 7, okay? You're okay.
That's exactly it, though. I mean, they want to play for the Super Bowl every single week against the Steelers.
Right.
At some point, you have to understand, the Patriots don't play like that. You know, the Eagles didn't play like that last year. The Chiefs aren't playing like that. The Steelers don't play like that. Why do you have to get yourselves up to play the Steelers, okay? The Steelers have to play the Ravens. Now that the Browns seem to have their number, they have to play a lot of those games too.
I know.
There's really no reason why you have to have that sense of urgency when you're 4-1 on top of the division, and I can't get over how different that Brown or the Bengals defense was or offense was in this game versus the way they've been in their first five games of the season. I can't get past that.
All right, so in the second half, now with Bell back, do you see a Steeler team that each week appears to be getting better?
I do. I do because, really, the Steelers' offense has a new offensive coordinator. There are certain things that opponents needed to kind of figure out what they were going to do with Randy Fichtner. You put Bell back on that field, you really don't know what they're going to do. When you have the ability to run or pass with Le'Veon Bell on the field and a good running back there and an offensive line that might have just played the best game they've ever played together, you put all that together, it's really hard to see how you want to be able to defend that. So for me, more than anything, I look at Ben Roethlisberger, if I'm a defensive coordinator, and I wonder – what does he want to do in these situations? And then put Bell in there. What might he do? I'm not sure how much you're going to be able to stop that over 8-9 drives in a game. So for me, I think an offense going against Pittsburgh has to play for the throat. They've got to get 35-plus points if they're going to be able to win, because the Steelers' offense now is so explosive, and they've done it in a way that does not rely on kind of the way that they've done it in the past. You put all that together, that's going to be a really hard team to prepare for. And I'm not sure whoever's left on their schedule is going to be able to do it. I'm not saying it's out of line right now. The Steelers could run the table. It's possible. Baltimore is going to be a really tough team to beat. Cincinnati is going to be a really tough team to beat. But there aren't good defensive teams the rest of the way for Pittsburgh, I think anyway.
And let's go back to where we started. What do you really think about Josh Allen?
he's a great runner. He's a great runner. If
terrific.
It was 1942, I think he might have a career. But, you know, I'm a North Dakota State grad. I've talked about this a bunch of times. I knew Craig Ball. He was there for a couple months before I graduated.
Yep.
Big fan of the guy. Mm-hmm. He developed plenty at North Dakota State,
yep.
And he was instrumental in developing Josh Allen. Josh Allen is the most technically flawed passer I think we've seen in a starting role probably the last 20 years in the NFL. The fact that he's had even a modicum of success to this point really just shows how astronomically talented that kid's arm is. I mean, it's unbelievable what he's able to do. We've seen it, but if he's going to get benched for Nate Peterman, something's really wrong in Buffalo. What a tough job to be a head coach.
I
don't know how much longer Sean McDermott makes it. I really don't.
I wouldn't put Nathan Peterman in a game in the Alliance of American Football. Okay.
Yeah. If you're even in college, do you want Josh Allen or Nate Peterman starting for you at the college level?
Right.
Is that an easy decision? I'm not even sure. And you're talking about, what, a fourth or fifth round pick, I forget what Peterman was, versus the seventh pick of the draft. Man.
Let me ask you, are you going to watch the Alliance games when they come up?
Yeah, I'll take a peek.
Yeah, I will too.
It's always kind of fun to see. Not the names as much as I'm curious how they're being coached. I'm curious what they're doing. You never know. I mean, you look at the NFL today, how many of their concepts are really bred in college? And we've talked about this a bunch over the years. What the college game creates is what the pro game eventually becomes.
Right.
We are now seeing the genesis of that. Now we are really seeing pro teams embrace college concepts. The AAFL, whatever it is, it's going to be another offshoot of that. I'm curious how they want to coach it, how they want to play it, how it's being managed. See that probably within first 2-3 games. What exactly are they doing?
I think they're
really interesting.
I think they're developing talent for the NFL. In other words, I think they're developing roster spots 35 through 53.
Yeah, I think they could. And those guys, those roster spots are won, mm-hmm. by and large, at least what we're told, during training camp. I don't agree with that. I think it they're won and lost based on who gets drafted. You know, let them get out there in the field and play. There are a lot of guys that might be able to show what they can do. I mean, Major League Baseball, a baseball player doesn't work out. It's because he isn't good enough. You know, mm-hmm. that. He survived in the minors. He either succeeded or he didn't. Football, you don't have that. You did it in college when you were 20 years old. I was talking with a couple of buddies of mine back in Minnesota, big Vikings fans, about Danelle Hunter.
Okay.
I didn't like Danelle Hunter coming out of college. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of things that I didn't like about watching his game. Look at the job that Mike Zimmer has done with that guy.
Yeah.
He actually plays
good
the
play.
Run now.
Yep.
Okay? He didn't do that before.
Kind of amazing.
Imagine that. You know, he's a multidimensional player, and he's a legit Defensive Player of the Year candidate right now.
Yeah.
If a guy like that, I mean, he's a third-round pick. He had all the physicality of a first-round guy. Third-round pick. Imagine if a guy that didn't quite get to that level is a sixth or seventh round pick, gets cut, doesn't work out for him. Practice squad is one thing. Imagine if he gets repped somewhere else, you know, in an environment where coaches get to watch him play and work with him. What might he be when he's 23, 24 years old?
Right.
I mean, you know, the NFL is a young man's game, and I get that, but largely it's because there isn't another option. Yep. They either play in the NFL or they don't.
Right.
You know, if there's a minor league system, if there's a feeder system, I really think we're going to see a couple of players that bloom a little bit later than what is normal, who turn into pretty good pros. I think we can see that.
Neil, as always, thanks so much. Appreciate it. And the check will be in the mail to each of us.
Yeah, definitely. Go Josh Allen.
Neil Coulon, USA Today. All right, great week. Really enjoyed it. Our thanks to all of our guests and especially to all of you. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And the Steve Jones Show, driven by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Don't forget Shikellamy football tonight at 6:30, Penn State football tomorrow at 2 on News Radio 1070 WKOK.